That's Katie Ledecky out of breath and very, very happy as she won, yeah, another medal. She went on to say that's the closest I've ever come to throwing up before a race. The U.S. is doing quite well in the swimming. It's interesting how the Summer Olympics are put out there, too, because this is all about swimming, and then they're all going to get to relax. We haven't even seen track and field yet.
Nope.
Track and field's all next week, and that's when we – I don't even know if we have anybody in track and field that we care about. I mean, back in the
day – we'll find out.
We will. Like, names that we don't even know. Like, we're all about swimming now. When I was a young lass, it was Carl Lewis. Carl Lewis and Michael Johnson. They were the Michael Phelps and Katie Ledeckys, really, and you know, throw Mary Lou Retton in there, too. But we forget, once upon a time, Carl Lewis doing the long jump, for example, was like, that was it, man. Like, that, everyone's gathered around your little dumb TV to watch that. That was a big deal. I remember the last Olympics in London, like, nobody even cared about the long jump. It was just happening, like, at 3 a.m. on Bravo Network, and you watched it.
I mean, is part of that have to do with the fact that there hasn't been a massive doping scandal in swimming over the last 10 to 15 years? I mean, like, if you think back to it, Carl Lewis is like the one that really didn't get busted with something.
Yeah.
And even then, you know, Carl Lewis was just a hair before my time because I remember him in the 96 Olympics with Michael Johnson and that whole crew. And I was like, Carl Lewis, why is everyone talking about this guy? You know, because he was a little bit older at the time. But I mean, you know, since then you've had, you know, the women and men's both sides, and not just with our country, track and field, and especially the sprinters. That's a dirty sport.
21 gold medals for Michael Phelps, 9 by Carl Lewis.
Wow. Bless
you.
That's
pretty ridiculous. 9 by Lewis, 9 by Spitz, and then some Russian girl, I didn't get her name, though. I was looking at the list up in front of me also with 9. 21! So here's a question. Is Michael Phelps the greatest athlete of all time?
I mean,
straight up, it's hard to quantify and get into metrics and this and that, and is a swimmer a better athlete than a decathlete? And I understand that, but when it comes to accomplished. Is he the greatest athlete to ever live?
Well, it's tough to top 21 gold medals.
Is he more accomplished than Michael Jordan?
Accomplished, yes. Mm-hmm. I don't know, greatest athlete of all time. This is a sticky one.
Because it is. Tough.
It's not like swimming isn't, you know, the peak of aerobic activity. But isn't there a part of you that wants to see, like, you know, how high can Michael Phelps jump? How fast can he run? You know, like, when we start comparing athletes, because the common thought is take the big three or even the big four. Throw hockey players in there if you want to. If you look, to some degree, a lot of those, we can compare certain things when it comes to, you know, running, jumping, whatever, thinking.
Yes.
For right or wrong, we don't apply a lot of those things to swimming, and so it feels hard to make the comparison.
I would imagine you have to, first off, I think swimming, and I've never been a professional swimmer, this just in, but I would have to imagine that swimming is extremely, like, the cardio required for swimming is insane.
Oh, yeah.
Not only are you exercising and extremely out of breath, but by the way, you can't breathe 75% of the time because, you know, you're underwater. Mm-hmm. So there's that.
Right.
But then I look at what Michael Phelps does, and I watch these little 4'2" girls doing gymnastics last night. Congratulations to the U.S. ladies for winning the gold medal there. I look at what they're doing, and not just the floor exercise where they run and do like 17 flips in the air and with double twists and this and that, whatever. But then they're on the balance beam. Then they're on the rings. Then they're on the parallel bars. Mm-hmm. So they're doing all these different disciplines with no tools, no bats or balls or rackets.
Mm-hmm.
It's just them and these apparatuses, whatever. And I mean, for me, just from a pure athletic standpoint, it's tough to beat gymnastics. But when it comes to accomplishments, and maybe the better question, the way you try to narrow it down, because you're never going to get the whole who's the best athlete of all time, because it's going to be some decathlete probably. But if you say who's the most dominant athlete of all time, on if you were to give, much like they give degrees of difficulty in diving or a lot of sports, if you were to combine points for size of the world stage or international or local, whatever it is, size of the stage with accomplishments and championships, and in this case, a gold medal is a championship, I have a hard time believing Michael Phelps is not the most dominant athlete in history.
Well, let's figure out how we're equating gold medals here, because I'm looking at, we'll take Michael Jordan, for example.
Sure.
As I'm just looking at his basketball reference page, I mean, a gold medal for Michael Phelps, every 4 years he gets to go out and he has this bevy of events to which it signifies he is the best. If we're comparing that to a basketball player, I don't think it's fair to just say a championship or an A-League MVP award, but how about all of the ways in which he's presented himself as the best? Michael Jordan was a 10-time scoring league leader, right?
Sure.
So it's 10 gold medals to me, right? Throw the championships on there. You got 16 gold medals. What else do you want to go with? All defensive teams, maybe? I mean, so how far do you break that down? What would you consider a gold medal for Mike? I realize this is getting really convoluted here.
No, it's a good answer. And going with what you're saying, and chime in, if you will, 339-1141, 800-920-1140. His first games, Michael Phelps was 2000, but the first one that he won medals is 2004. So now we're talking 04, 08, 12. So four Olympic games, right? To your point, it's not like Michael Phelps goes into a cave and somebody unlocks the door every 4 years and he swims. You've also got a ton of different
idea,
you have a ton of different things going on in between those Olympics when it comes to your international championships and qualifiers and this and that. So when you're listing off Jordan's accomplishments, well, Phelps, we only pay attention to his accomplishments every 4 years. But really, he's been the best swimmer in the world now for the better part of 12 years, since 04, let's say, and now we're in 2016. That's 12 years where if you won a title every year like Michael Jordan could, you added in the Olympics and all that stuff every 4 years. Now, granted, in the NBA or in basketball, you get one medal if your team wins in the Olympics, whereas Michael Phelps has, you know, up to, what, 8 chances each time to win a medal. I don't know, man. It's not just like he's doing one type of swimming either. You've got the relays, you've got the breaststroke, the butterfly, the back, all these different ways he can win medals. And I know it's one of those old man at a bar, two pitchers of beer conversation where you're never going to have a clear-cut winner. 20 gold medals and second place is 9.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just
pretty tough to beat. And the fact that, again, is something that we're only accounting for his production every 4 years, not the stuff in between.
Right.
Now, another Michael Jordan thing. Between league MVPs, defensive player of the year, rookie of the year, and all-star game MVPs, he has 16 of those.
That's true. That's true. Would you also count the North Carolina National Championship?
You could count that. You could count his NCAA AP Player of the Year, his John Wooden Award, his Naismith Award.
So if all those are gold medals, now you're getting a little closer. It's a good way to look at it, though.
I'm having fun with the conversation.
Yeah, here's from the text line.
It's Player of the Week 25 times.
From the 916, ding dong here. Is it required to ask a question 8 different ways like we're all in preschool? Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, no, it's not condescending, stupid. It's called, you ask the question, it's a nuanced question, so you start... Sometimes you have to try to find the right way to ask the question. Is Michael Phelps the greatest athlete of all time? Well, that's an unanswerable question. Okay, is Michael Phelps the most dominant athlete of all time? That's all. We're trying to answer that.
Narrow it down a little bit.
You have to start and then narrow down the question. A couple others here, both same theme. At $25,000 per gold medal, that puts him over $500,000 in proceeds from gold medals. And then also... where is it here? Here we go. Compare Michael Jordan's wallet to Michael Phelps. See, I don't know why does money come into play.
No, that's
at all.
There are two arguments I'm trying to avoid here, which is look at the money, because that's just not Phelps' fault that he's not playing a high
Otherwise,
revenue.
Otherwise, Kim Kardashian is one of the greatest entertainers in the history of the world.
Exactly.
If you look at money.
And the other one is, you know, essentially swimming doesn't count because it's not running, jumping. You know, that would be the easy take. Like, oh, come on, it's a swimmer. We're trying to find an argument otherwise, because there's no objective way to say that Michael Phelps is not as athletically dominant as anybody that's ever competed in sports.
I guess part of it also is how we look at the sport, too. If for example, if Michael Phelps was a fencer and he won 20...
Or if he was doing dressage, I'll trash those guys.
So then are you... Well, I mean, at least... The horse racing I get, because that's, I don't want to say it's unathletic. There's athletic stuff to everything, but
give the horse the medal. Medal belongs to the horse.
It's a tough question, man.
The Olympics are for people.
But it is fun to appreciate, and it is fun to appreciate as we're living it right now. And odds are, I'm guessing this is our final Olympics with Michael Phelps. We thought the last one was. I don't know. You win if he goes and wins what? I think he has a chance to win 6 gold medals in this Olympics. If he wins 6 gold medals, I mean, do you automatically count him out of 2000?
You have to defend. Right? You must.
Don't you? 35?
Why not?
Is 35 old? I mean, I guess it is.
For some people.
For gymnastics, that's like double. The 35-year-old, that's like you have a kid that's on the gymnastics team. We'll take a break. Come back. Four Down Territories next on The Drive. Sports 1140 KHDK.
All right, here we go. Amy Trask told The Lowdown, the Raiders, and Oakland. Or, excuse me, let's try that again. She told The Lowdown that the Raiders and Oakland should collaborate on a stadium.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
Yeah.
Is there a chance in hell this happens?
So, basically, Amy Trask told The Lowdown that she wants the Raiders and the city to collaborate on a new stadium. Got it? I got it, right?
Got it.
Just make it, because
Want me to do it again? Let's do it again.
I think you nailed it.
First down.
Here's the deal. No. No, I don't think there is. And I don't say that lightly. Despite the fact that we've done studies on this show and online, that there is a much larger contingent of Raider fans than I would have ever expected that are okay with them moving to Las Vegas. Well, I feel bad for the other ones. I think the Raiders belong in Oakland. They should stay there. That's where they need to be. And as much as I goof on Oakland sometimes, listen, man, the Warriors are moving to San Francisco. The A's have the crappy ballpark. And you know what? Say what you want about the city of Oakland. Those fans are freaking badass. They deserve the team. But that city, they don't have the money. They don't have the money, and they don't have a Kevin Johnson or a David Stern in their corner to help them like Sacramento did. I don't see how the hell it's going to work.
Yeah, it's not going to. And I don't know that they need it. Just as you said, we've heard from so many Raiders fans that seem to be all right with it. Like, hey, man, I root for the silver and black. You could pretty much put them anywhere, and I'm fine. And I applaud their fans for having that kind of foresight. It's not easy to see your team potentially relocate. But to be able to take it in stride and say, again, I root for the helmet. I don't root for the city, knowing that it's not that far away. Good on them, but it's just not going to happen.
Josh Norman is taking a TV gig on the side. Is that a good idea?
On the one hand, I want to applaud anyone that gets theirs and strikes while the iron's hot, which is pretty much what Josh Norman is doing. But on the other hand, there's something that, I don't know exactly what to name it. In 30 Rock, they called it the Peter Principle, because there's something to be said for knowing what your slot is in life and not exceeding expectations and setting yourself up for failure. Josh Norman is a very good cornerback, but he has yet to sustain it for a long period of time in the NFL. And if I were in his position, I am always very careful about outstepping expectations. I need to make sure things are good before I'm like, hey, I'm famous TV guy now. Look at this guy. So strike while the iron's hot. But, I mean, dude, don't set yourself up for a bigger fall.
It's a catch-22. Because on one hand, if Josh Norman and Brandon Marshall did this with Showtime, this isn't unprecedented. If Josh Norman,
Brandon Marshall is pretty established, though, by
yes,
the time he...
And that's the thing. If Norman has a great year, nobody's going to care. But if Josh Norman's having a rough year, well, you know, he did this and that. Now, the contract just says he's going to do some stuff from his house on the side. And then on his bye week, he's going to fly in studio. So it's not like he's going to be sitting on the sideline doing sideline reports. What was funny is... He says, Josh Norman says, Jay Gruden knew all about it. Jay Gruden was asked about it. I was like, wait, what, huh? What the hell are you talking about? I have no idea what's going on. And Josh Norman basically said, literally said, that wacky Jay Gruden. I'm with you in the sense that, especially when it comes to football players, and we just talked about this, Prince Fielder's neck is basically broken. He's done. He's retiring. But guess what? He's getting $24 million a year for the next 3 years. Not in football. Football is finite, and as the famous saying said, it stands for not for long. That's what the NFL is. If I'm Josh Norman, I do everything I can. If I have this opportunity, you're damn right, I'm going to do it. Look, Chris Collinsworth down in the Olympics right now, calling games. He was a wide receiver, calling games. He's calling games on Sunday Night Football, but he's got a great career. And for me, I say if you're a football player, get everything you can when you can.
Which quarterback is most poised to go to the next level this season?
Ooh, I've got two in mind, and it's kind of hard with both of these guys. This is how I'm taking the question here. They're already statistically pretty damn good. I'm talking about not just stats, but also helping take their team to the next level. And I don't want to steal your mojo, Nate, by throwing two out here, but honest to God, it's a coin flip between Blake Bortles and Derek Carr.
I was wondering who the second were. You know, I knew Derek Carr would be there, but
Blake Bortles very, very quietly had a very interesting year last year in Jacksonville.
You should pick him up in your fantasy draft.
Well, I just as a matter of fact, just might do that. He's going to be, I mean, if he puts up what he did last year, he's going to put up some pretty damn good fantasy stats. But when you look at his overall, I mean, the guy, his numbers tend to, I think, surprise people. When you look at what he did last year, for example, completed almost 60% of his passes, 4,400 yards, 35 touchdowns, 18 interceptions. So he's throwing a few picks here and there, but he's got that young receiving core. He's got a guy like TJ Yates at back. Jacksonville had allegedly a good draft. Jacksonville's one of those teams. Everyone's talking about the Raiders. Jacksonville's one of those teams that I think could be very, very interesting this year. So because I think Derek Carr is the popular pick, and probably rightfully so, I'm going to go with Blake Bortles going to the next level with the Jags.
Well, it's Derek Carr for me, because the biggest issue with the Jags is that their coach is Gus Bradley, and he stinks, and they're just afraid to fire him because he's too nice of a guy. I know Derek Carr seems to be the easy choice, but it's right there, you guys. He showed it all last year. The team's going to make a huge leap. And frankly, I mean, Blake Bortles would probably be the safest choice. Other than that, there's a litany of guys that, I don't know, Marcus Mariota's not that guy to me. Not this year. Not with Mike Mularkey trying to go 3 yards in a cloud of dust. Pick someone else. None of the rookies are going to be the guy. Derek Carr blowing up for the Oakland Raiders.
Fantasy football is a-coming. Is there a clear number one overall pick?
Never, ever, because anytime you have, no matter what you do at the number one overall pick, you're probably failing. I would say if I was in a PPR league and I had the first overall
points
pick.
Points per reception.
Oh, yeah, sorry. It would be Antonio Brown. Other than that, eh. I'm not even confident in that.
It is tough. I mean, I remember many a year where there was a clear cut. Hey, who are you picking first? LaDainian Tomlinson.
Adrian Peterson.
And Adrian Peterson, going back a year ago, there were some people that took Adrian Peterson number one and got laughed at. Remember, he was coming off of the abuse thing and the suspension and all that. Plus, he's getting up there in age, that type of thing. And Adrian Peterson went out and had a fantastic year and was deserving in some cases of that. Obviously, as you said, it depends on how your league is structured. I played in a league last year that basically the only way you got points was touchdowns. And I hate that. I like the leagues that you get a point for a reception, 1 point every 10 yards, rushing, receiving, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Year after year, at least in the leagues I'm in generally, it's the quarterbacks that are the highest scoring guys. The quarterbacks are the ones that score the highest, but there's more quarterbacks to deal with. And with quarterbacks, you know you're having that starter barring injury every single week. So sometimes I tend to go with the quarterback, but overall, you got people that are loading up on running backs. So much running back by committee, though, now, where it's so freaking difficult. So I don't know. Normally for me, it would probably be Le'Veon Bell, but because of what he's dealing with right now, I tend to agree with you. If it's not Adrian Peterson, it's probably Antonio Brown. And that just goes to show you it's a great time. Oh, you could throw Devontae Freeman in there too, by the way. No one's going to pick him number one. But Devontae Freeman had a pretty good stretch last year as well.
He's a good one. You know, why not, I mean, other than health, why not a guy like Julio Jones that, again, is twice this year going to face the absolute worst defense in the league in the Saints?
No, you're 100% right. You're 100% right.
And the thing that scares me about Antonio Brown is Ben Roethlisberger, not because you never know when Roethlisberger is going to miss a game here or there. His fantasy output last year was nuts. I mean, like, he had some really great games, but also in something like half of his games, he scored 12 points or fewer, which means he's useless, completely useless at all. So,
I'm looking at some mock drafts. Yeah, I was looking at some of these last night. I knew the question was going to come up here. I've seen in more than a couple drafts that David Johnson of Arizona Todd Gurley, those guys are going ahead of Adrian Peterson. It's a very interesting year this year.
I'd listen to the case for Gurley, but I don't want the number one pick, period. Don't give it to me.
I completely agree with you. Give me somewhere in the 3 to 4 range. Give me somewhere in the top five, you know, let's say 12 team league. Give me somewhere in the top five, top six, obviously if it's a snake league. By the way, we will, not to bore you out with fantasy football, a couple notes, though. Dave Richard, CBS lead fantasy sports writer, will join us weekly during the season. We'll have him on next week to help preview your drafts. And then we're going to get some sort of a fantasy league going on. We'll have something with one of the daily leagues, and then we'll also have one where we can all draft together, stuff like that, and we'll update you. We're going to find a way, as we do every year, to get you guys involved in the fantasy world with us as well. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Hey, it's the 7:30 sweep. We go camping with the Raiders, the midday show, we like to call it the lowdown. They were out there yesterday. They'll be broadcasting in Napa today as well, bringing you Raider coverage. D'Lo, Damian Barling is going to join us and give us exactly what he saw, the sights, sounds, and smells of Raider camp. Plus, we have a lot of sound for you next on The Drive, Sports 1140 KHTK. Coach Jack Del Rio, off day.
Jack of the River.
Monday, back at it yesterday, ready to go. And boy, those Raiders are going to be playing this weekend.
Already in Arizona.
I love it. I love that football's back. I really do. It's so much more to me than just football's back. It's football's back. Preseason NFL means college football is right around the corner, and I'm a huge college football homer.
Yeah.
It means that we have more hot days behind us than ahead of us.
That's true.
Means the NBA season, you're starting to see schedule leaks and stuff all over the place. The NBA season. Well, Mark Stein had a report a couple days ago saying that the Thunder were going to – he had the date the Thunder would first host the Warriors in Oklahoma City. You're starting to see some key games nationally leak out, which means something that's called the draft schedule, which is just what sounds like a rough draft schedule, is out and circulating right now amongst teams. They make minor adjustments and then release that schedule. That's coming up very soon. Baseball playoffs around the corner, pennant races. We have this conversation every year. I honestly think this is, without a doubt to me, the best time in sports. But right around the corner.
Couple weeks,
we're going to begin the stretch where you get into from basically, I would say, September 1st until the Super Bowl. Best time in sports.
Yeah, there's like this, and I mean, it's like that kind of broadly in life, right, too, where starting about, I don't know, beginning of August almost, it's like a death march through the end of the summer, like right up until maybe Halloween or something.
Yes.
Whether it's, you know, you've got football, basketball, baseball playoffs, and then that's when everyone like has their weddings and there's softball tournaments and like, you know, Memorial Day.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
It's the off season. Somebody asked on the text line, we haven't mentioned it since the start of the show, where the heck is Katie? And and Katie's been off a lot lately. Here's why. And she had a little minor surgery so she could breathe better through her nose. Yeah, so she'll be back probably either tomorrow or I think personally most likely Friday, because I saw her yesterday and she was, you know, I don't feel good, that type of thing. but in Katie's case, Grant Napier the same way. And then you go with athletes, but I'm mentioning them because they work with the Kings. Summer is when you take all your time off,
mm-hmm.
because once the season starts, like Katie, for example, once the season starts, she's here. Barring an illness or something, she's here for the duration. She doesn't really get any legit time off other than the holidays until late April, unless, of course, the Kings make the playoffs. And then it'd be in May, perhaps, right? So, yes, we're getting to the point where the Raiders play this weekend, the Niners play this weekend, and we're really starting to see things break down in camp. We're starting to get a better idea. By the way, Hard Knocks is going to be debuting very, very soon. That's another that has become a hallmark of the impending fall season for me. Is you see Hard Knocks come up and feel good about that.
There couldn't be a better team for that too. I saw somewhere last night that Jeff Fisher had a real money quote on there. He was yelling at someone that was half-assing their way through a drill, and he said, "That's 7-9, 8-8 crap right there." Like nobody, Jeff, right. Nobody is more qualified to diagnose 8-8 crap than Jeff Fisher.
Here's Ian Rappaport on the culture of the Oakland Raiders. That's Ian Rappaport joining us right now. You'll hear him noon to 3 along with Jason Ross and
Ken Rudolph.
Yeah. The reason I forgot Ken's name. What were they saying in the promo? Two ties. Damian Bartlett. Yeah, what is the genesis there? I apologize because I'm oftentimes, this is a great promo for the Lowdown here. Sometimes I have to nap during parts of your show, so I must have missed
one
that.
One for the show, one for the low. Come on. Right?
What's the two ties, D?
I got to take a nap during our show sometimes, too, so it's cool. When he goes to work every morning, he can't decide his tie, so he wraps two of them around his neck, and he decides once he gets to the station, and the station being the television station. Once he gets to KHDK, I can't really explain why he still has the two ties around his neck.
Because
he's obviously
point.
Decided at that point.
Well, does he only have one dress shirt? Because, I mean, that's vital in the whole tie, shirt, suit combination deal.
Oh, yeah, of course. He has one dress shirt, but he, you know, picks a tie that rolls with them both and then decides once he gets there.
You've worked with Ken Rudolph now for a while, Damian, and he is one of my favorite people. I love him to death, but and which always means I'm going to say something bad about him. Ken has a couple of quirks, doesn't he?
A couple? Like, are we narrowing it down?
Well, it's
Ken
funny.
Ken, first of all, you have to realize that once we go on the air at 12, you know, Ken has been up for about 8-9 hours at that point. Mm-hmm. He's done a full television show. So there are many days where, as great as he is, you know, he is very much the get off my lawn,
yes,
you know, old man of the show. And sometimes it's fun, it's playful, and we roll along with it. And sometimes it's just, get off my lawn, you know, and it's like, okay, buddy, let's reel it in a little bit, Ken.
he's cranky, you know, Ken.
But yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Which is great.
It's a perfect dynamic because Jason Ross, I don't think, has been cranky a day in his life.
So I was just going to say, for you, you have the best of both worlds. You have Ken, who will mix it up with anyone and is cranky and get off my lawn. And you have Jason, who we often say is one of those guys where if you don't get along with Jason Ross, there's something wrong with you.
Oh, Jason, I think, is like made of a rainbow. Like Jason is probably the closest to being a perfect human being that I've ever met.
I don't really know how to transition, so I guess
I don't know. I just want what if Jason Ross tests positive for PED someday, right, or something like that? Like, we need
like the Derek Jeter of KHDK.
We need to humanize
here.
Him.
I mean,
it would ruin radio forever if Jason Ross ever tested positive for PEDs. I've always said if Derek Jeter tested positive, it would ruin baseball forever. If Jason Ross tests positive, it ruins radio. Like, radio's over.
And let's be honest, Jason on amphetamines would be fun for nobody.
Oh my goodness! Absolutely.
Disagree.
Absolutely.
You can look at it either way. How's life down there in Napa there, Damian? I mean, what's going on? Raiders
Napa
camp?
Know-how?
I mean, yeah, you got Napa know-how going on. Raiders, things are looking up. I mean, what's the vibe around there, I guess? Do they feel like they're a team that's competing for something this year?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they absolutely do, and they don't shy away from it. We talked to two, you know, really great individuals. Yes, great, great interviews. You know, Rodney Hudson, their starting center, walked right off the practice field, tape on, just pulled his gear off and sat down at the table yesterday.
How do you smell?
You know, I heard you guys talk about the sights, sounds, and smells. I can give you the sights and sounds. There weren't too many smells coming from them, but I just, you know, wasn't getting close enough to find out. when Rodney sat down, he was very clear. They hear what everyone's saying about them, and they make it a point. Many of the veterans on the team make it a point to point that stuff out and then remind them, you know, we can easily blow this. As much as everyone's talking, oh, look how improved they are, look how cohesive they look, we could still blow it. And so he talked about, you know, being one with the offensive line, being one with the quarterback, the offensive line doing their jobs, because that's one of the areas, the offensive line, that has been really praised this offseason. And having watched them practice yesterday against the first team defense, there's a good reason why they're getting the praise that we've heard so much about.
D'Lo, Damian Barling joining us on KHK. You can hear him and friends noon to 3 today live from Napa. You know, one of the reasons why you couldn't smell any of the Raiders is that you were probably, you have this shield of good smellingness that surrounds you. I commented on it yesterday. Damian Barling, the greatest smelling radio host in the entire world. I don't know your thoughts, Damian. Yeah, I don't know what the hell you wear, but
it's a unique combination of cocoa butter and genetics.
See, and he's not lying either, by the way. I could see Damian rubbing some pregame cocoa butter on himself before he rolls in every single day.
You know what's hysterical is that is absolutely true, and it's a running joke on the show, in that I have a small thing of cocoa butter in the bag, uh-huh. and once that Boys in the Hood music hits, Ken dabs on a little, I dab on a little. If Jason Ross is feeling frisky, he'll dab on a little, and we do the – it's similar to LeBron's chalk throw. It's very similar to that, and rub it on, clap, and we're ready to roll. And if we don't do it, it's weird.
Well, I mean, I kind of get what you're saying.
So think about that. If three guys don't rub cocoa butter on themselves before the show, that's weird. Yeah.
I just generally stand outside and inhale the secondhand smoke. That's our routine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm aware. You know, Carmichael Dave talked about what it smells like when he walks into the studio. Would you like a play-by-play of what it smells like when I walk in the studio?
He's coming. Dude, I have an idea.
I sit in it.
Yeah, exactly. And let's be honest.
I mean, like, in it.
You're not completely out of the woods, Nate, when it comes to smells in the studio either, whether you smoke or not. Here's the thing. This is why I love talking to other people on the station, because I had no idea they had a cocoa butter thing. That's great.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. We have all sorts of little dumb stuff we do before shows start. It knocks the edge off for me. Those guys are so relaxed. I still am a little uptight before shows start.
We're hearing a lot about the culture, and we heard from Ian Rappaport. We played that clip talking about Jack Del Rio creating a professional environment. And this is a team that has been so roughshod and goofy. And, you know, when you have a losing mentality, things tend to also be a little bit unprofessional, hand in hand. Yeah. Are you noticing a much more organized, professional, positive environment out there?
Oh, my goodness, man. We were told yesterday, we were sitting down with the media relations guy, Will. He sat down right at the table before the show started. And we were going over the itinerary when we were going to expect Rodney to come to the table. Shalique Calhoun, a rookie out of Michigan State, who comes on and does an interview like he's a 10-year vet in the league. Just phenomenal kid. But we're running over the rundown, and Jason makes the remark. So practice ends at 1:30, and Will, without skipping a beat, says 1:27. Gets up and walks away from the table.
Wow.
I looked at Jason and I was like, okay, there's a reason he said 1:27. This practice is ending at 1:27. And it became a running counter on the rest of the show, in that there's no way it is going over 1 minute. Once that clock hits 1:27, they're breaking and this thing is over. And sure enough, huddle forms at 1:26, 1:27, they're scattering. And so that was the first thing we noticed. You talked about organization. The smoothness of the practice from one drill to the next was, you know, you'd hear the horn go off, guys would go grab their water, you'd hear the horn go off again, and they'd be exactly where they had to be, and things would pick up right away. And then last week, we heard so much about the scuffles and the fights, even over the weekend. I think now this week has a totally different vibe because they got a game Friday. And it's real now. It's a preseason game, but it's live football action against another team. So yesterday, it really felt like they were gearing up for something. It wasn't a bunch of guys stuck in training camp. It wasn't, you know, guys going through the grind. It was guys who have a purpose, and that purpose is the Arizona Cardinals on Friday.
So take me through the day yesterday, I guess, in terms of how long was the practice session? You said they wrapped it up at 1:27, but like, what are you seeing? Are you just watching warm-ups, and then you got position drills, and then you see team on both sides of the ball, or what do you got?
Yeah, that was just about it in a different order. By the time I got there at I think it was just after 10 o'clock, the guys were already on the field. Different position things were going on, very light, relaxed, no hitting, full pads on it, but kind of just going through the motions, almost like going through plays, but, you know, at half speed. And then you'd start to hear the horn go off, and then things kind of picked up. You would see position battles. You know, guys go over to their position coach. The defensive line, which was awesome, was practicing 10 feet from us. You know, Khalil Mack was in front of us. You know, Bruce Irvin, who we're going to talk to today, was in front of us, and they were going through their drills. And then shortly after that, like right in the heart of our show, is when the ones and the twos went out there to run offense and defense. And that was a lot of fun to watch because you could see, you know, Carr and Crabtree connect. You could see Carr and Cooper connect. You could see, you know, DeAndre Washington break off for a couple of runs. McGloin ran this ridiculous, like, naked bootleg where he picked up, like, 20 yards. And this was as we were on, and all we were thinking is, that play is going to be shown in film. And the coach, you know, Ken Norton Jr. is going to ask how the one guy in a red jersey who can't run got on the other side of the field totally by himself. So, that was a perfect layout that you had right there, Nate. And then once they broke up from huddle, they weren't even remotely close to done. You saw guys kind of run to our area because we're right in front of the weight room. They took off their shells, took off their pads. They went in and lifted. You saw receivers working out on the gun. I think Janikowski kicked one field goal and then just walked right off the field. So you saw, like, a lot of that type of stuff.
D'Lo, Damian Barling joining us. Listen to him and the rest of the boys down at Napa Raider Camp today, noon to 3. Before you go, just want to throw this out to you. Mm-hmm. Prince Fielder is retiring because he's got the neck issue. Mm-hmm. I just got this. He is owed the following: $30 million from the Tigers, $36 million from the Rangers, and $36 million from insurance. Prince Fielder will be paid $102 million not to play. Your thoughts?
Hell, I won't play for $100 million. Hell, I won't play for $100. Not a bad deal if you can get it. I mean, I know we're kidding. That's a terrible story. You hate to see guys kind of forced out of the game. But, hey, at least he's not – at least he can feed his family, as they say.
It kind of makes sense now. I get a little bit more even why Tim Tebow's trying to be a baseball player.
Oh, my goodness. I always said, you know, if I was, you know, fortunate enough to have a kid, I was going to make him a left-handed pitcher.
Yep. Well, and we were talking about this yesterday, Damian. What was your take on that whole Tebow thing? We were going back and forth for much of the morning. I'm curious where you played out.
You guys spent far more time on it than we did. I mean, what I always laugh when guys in one sport, and this was the extent of our conversation, when guys in one sport think they can kind of just walk into the other. You know, like I use the example.
Hello, it's Grant.
You've heard so many people associated with the NFL say LeBron James could play a defensive back in the NFL because of his size and because of his speed. And then you would hear a guy like, I don't know, Ray Lewis or J.J. Watt, oh, yeah, it'd be great to, you know, have LeBron in a football uniform or whatever it may be. And my thought is always that's what those guys say publicly because LeBron's a big name, they're a big name, they keep the peace, and you just do things like that. But behind closed doors, they got to be thinking like, man, are you kidding me? We've devoted our whole life to this, and you've devoted your whole life to being basketball or being a basketball player. Just because I can hit a couple of shots doesn't mean I can go play professional basketball. Just because LeBron is big and quick doesn't mean he can go play professional football. There's a reason that those guys are the best at what they do. So when I saw the Tim Tebow story, the first thing I did was just kind of like laugh. Like, he really, you're just going to walk in and play baseball after you can't throw a football to a wide receiver, but you can throw a baseball to a catcher in a really tight window that varies from, you know, home plate umpire to home plate umpire. I was not super. Yeah, I wasn't really buying that.
Noon to 3 today from Napa, Raider Camp, D'Lo, Ken, Jason, listening.
Hello, 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 1-2-1-2-1-2-1-2.
Butter through your speakers. Appreciate the time, buddy. Thank you.
Thanks, Damian.
Appreciate you guys.
All right, take care. That is D'Lo, Damian Barling. Noon to 3 today from Napa. It's exciting for them.
Hello, hello.
All the fun.
We'll take a break. We'll come back. A lot of stuff to cover, including, you know, we're going to keep it all in-house. This is like KHDK Day, by the way. We're going to get the nationally syndicated Grant Napier, who also happens to do a show here as well, right, in the afternoons. Yeah, yeah. We got a lot of stuff to talk to Grant about, whether it's the Olympics, the upcoming basketball season. I think he knows a couple things about football and the New York Giants. We'll do that next on The Drive, Sports 1140 KHDK.